prosecutor said the economy is so tightly tied to Samsung, we need to follow through.
A top Samsung official awaits arrest in Korean presidential scandal. It's Thursday, January 19th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Welcome. You're also a part of our program. Log in now to Facebook at VOA Asia. Send us your comments. Also ahead, difficult business in China. Myanmar refugees on the move. As his presidency ends, Cambodians remember Barack Obama. It's time for us to get started with VOA Asia. South Korea's special prosecutor is seeking the Samsung chief Lee Jae-yong, accusing the business leader Lee of paying over $36 million in bribes to an organization linked to Choi Soon-sil, the central figure in an influence peddling and corruption scandal. VOA Steve Miller speaks to reporter Bruce Harrison, who is in Seoul, for the latest.
He spent about 4 hours, nearly 4 hours, in the Seoul Central District Court this morning undergoing questioning in an arrest warrant hearing. The prosecution believes he moved these bribes along to the Park government to smooth his succession, and the defense says he had nothing to do with that. Yes, they did give money to these corporations run by Park's friend, Choi Soon-sil, but he had no intent for this to be in any support of the merger and his ultimate secession plot. The defense also says that because Samsung is so closely tied to the economy, it would be a risk to the nation, the corporation, to put him in detention. Right now, he is detained outside of Seoul at, interestingly enough, the same detention center as Choi Soon-sil. She is being held there while her case is tried in Seoul. She's been criminally charged on several counts, and her trial is still playing out. And he is just waiting for the judge in Seoul to make a decision on whether or not he'll be arrested.
Do we have an idea of when the judge may release his decision?
All I've heard is that it could be before midnight, but late Wednesday night, or perhaps early morning Thursday Korea time. But it's unclear. Sometimes getting an arrest warrant issued is pretty snappy depending on the circumstances, but in a high-profile case like this, this was not unexpected for it to take this long, and in cases in the past, it has also taken this long and run into the early hours of the morning.
Now, one of the things you mentioned is that the prosecutors decided to look at the impact on Lee's arrest on South Korea's economy, but ultimately deciding that justice was more important than that. And I wanted to get your take on how that was received in South Korea, especially since President Park, during her run-up to the election in 2012, she made Chaebol, or these big conglomerates, the reform of those and the way they interacted with the South Korean economy, one of her central pledges during the campaign.
Yeah, that's interesting. Those reforms really haven't seemed to come into place if we're in a situation like this. The prosecutor said the economy is so tightly tied to Samsung, we need to follow through. I'll note, though, that Samsung has many layers, and even if he is detained for a period of time, the company will be able to stand on its feet, at least in the short term. They have high-level executives managing a lot of different units of the company. As far as the response, the greater public response here, I haven't heard too much. I spent some time at the court today where he was undergoing questioning. There weren't crowds outside. There weren't people picketing, maybe just a handful, a few people out of the special prosecutor's office, the team that is pursuing this case. I think a lot of this perhaps derives from the political scandal as a whole. I think there's greater pressure now to punish a big corporation, and the public would like to see that happen perhaps. But I haven't seen too much anger that Park and Hay faced. Now, if you do go to the weekend protests that are still going on, Lee Jae-yong is right next to Park Geun-hye in Gwanghwamun Square, bound and tied with ropes, an oversized statue of Lee Jae-yong. So people are obviously upset. But it's hard to gauge right now during this questioning, really, how so, I think.
Reporter Bruce Harrison in Seoul. Our top story is evolving, so keep up with the latest developments by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and, of course, our VOAnews.com website. These are among the top Asia stories trending on voanews.com. China asks the United States to stop a delegation of Taiwanese dignitaries from attending Friday's presidential inauguration of Donald Trump. Vietnam signals softer stance on contested South China Sea. Australia says suspended MH370 search could resume in the future. Thousands of Fukushima evacuees face hardship as subsidies are to be slashed. Low-lying Micronesia hopes Trump reconsiders his stance on climate change. Expanded coverage of these stories and more is on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website. VOA Asia continues. Hong Kong Chief Executive Leung Chin Ying on Wednesday dismissed any attempt to make the territory independent or separate from mainland China. In a lengthy farewell speech ahead of the territory's March 26th election of a new leader by an appointed electoral committee, Leung said Hong Kong is an inalienable part of China and there's absolutely no room for independence or any form of separation. He said under the city's one country, two systems arrangement, everyone has the obligation to fully comply with the territory's constitutional document known as the Basic Law and safeguard national sovereignty, security, and territorial integrity. Leung, who came to power in 2012, broke up democracy protests in 2014 that blocked major roads for weeks. Retired political science professor Joseph Cheng tells VOA's Victor Beatty that he views the comments as another routine act of political correctness by Hong Kong leaders.
Apparently, this is a very good excuse for the crackdown on the young radical group, as well as a very good reason for denying Hong Kong political reforms, which is badly needed, and the lack of which, in fact, causes a lot of social and political polarization and confrontation, which is exactly the subject of debates, of statements among the chief executive candidates at the moment.
Did not Chief Executive Leung Chun Ying take office back in 2012, pledging to bring greater democracy to the city?
Yes. In fact, the Chinese authorities also promised Hong Kong that we may have universal suffrage in the election of the chief executive by 2017. That was exactly the cause for all these deliberations and advocacy for political reforms in 2013 and 2014. Of course, when Beijing withdrew this pledge, then this resulted in the occupation campaign in the second half of 2014.
What is the state of the one country, two systems arrangement?
It seems that the Chinese leaders understand that they can no longer try to pretend to continue its promise of democracy eventually to Hong Kong. It is no use to preach gradual reforms or democracy will come when the conditions are right, that kind of thing. And at the same time, Chinese leaders began to say that Hong Kong is not indispensable to China's development. In fact, Hong Kong depends on China much more than the other way around. And these two reasons seem to justify a very hawkish line on Hong Kong. Namely, Chinese leaders would like Hong Kong to accept their definitions of the parameters of the one country, two systems model, and Hong Kong people have to learn to accept and live within such parameters, causing a lot of fear and concern, not so much with the lack of democracy, but with the gradual erosion of our core values and our lifestyle.
Joseph Cheng said young people in Hong Kong, skeptical of Beijing and faced with declining job opportunities and a growing wealth gap, are resorting to migration. As for the post of chief executive, he said it appears that former chief secretary Carrie Lam is China's favored candidate to succeed Leung. Happening now in Asia. Long-standing doubts about the accuracy of China's economic data just got support. The provincial governor admits a large officials, rather local officials, cooked the books in that province for years. The embarrassing revelation coming days before the closely watched release of China's national economic data. Stay up to date with VOA. We're happier with us on VOA Asia. China may be one of the world's biggest markets, a country that is not lacking in potential, but is also seen as an increasingly difficult place to do business. In its latest annual overview, the American Chamber of Commerce in China found that as many as 81% of its members feel unwelcome. Companies doing business say that it's not just the rising cost of doing business in China, but inconsistent and unclear regulations, as well as increasing Chinese protectionism that is fueling pessimism. AmCham China Chairman William Zaret.
There are policies here that really make it more and more difficult to do business. Again, whether it's protectionism, unclear regulations, difficulty getting certification for doing business. The sense of building Chinese champions at the expense of sometimes American companies being able to do their business here, depending on the industry sector, I think that also adds to this feeling of not being welcome.
From 2012 until now, the percentage of companies that identify China as one of their top three global investment destinations has slipped from a peak of 78% to just 56%, according to the survey. On Tuesday, Chinese President Xi Jinping talked up open markets and warned against protectionism. Well, just how much of an impact the incoming administration of President-elect Donald Trump will have, who's been a harsh critic of China's trade practices, will be unclear.
It makes sense that the U.S. policymakers want to be a little more forthcoming, and in some cases a lot more forthcoming and perhaps firmer on negotiating with the Chinese on economic issues, because we feel that over the last few years that we've been taken advantage of to some extent with our open market and the lack of openness in many areas of the Chinese market.
Zaret says members of the trade lobby are very concerned about the year ahead and will be doing everything they can to make sure the U.S.-China commercial relationship stays beneficial to both China and especially the U.S.
We just want to make sure that we don't get into a situation, a trade war or something like it, where both sides will lose.
The survey found that if Beijing were to remove discriminatory barriers to foreign investment companies and investment restrictions, members of the business group say they would significantly increase investment. However, the survey shows few are optimistic that that will happen anytime soon.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
This news alert from VOA Asia. China's problem with fake goods even includes the condiments and seasonings that people sprinkle on their food. Authorities in northern China say they have busted several underground factories that were churning out counterfeit versions of products like soy sauce and spice mix. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA Asia Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Reports say Burma, also known as Myanmar, has agreed to begin talks with neighboring Bangladesh about an estimated 65,000 Rohingya Muslims who have fled northwestern Burma. I asked the chief of VOA Burmese, Tan Win Hutun, about what is causing this group to move right now and the significance of the talks.
Is it not new thing that the two countries talking about a refugee issue? For example, like back in 2014, there's a few so-called boat people, Rohingya boat people, mm-hmm. were intercepted by the Burmese Navy off that Bay of Bengal and the Indian Ocean. And then they were brought back to Burma. And they're numbering something about 700 people, I think. So for that, Burmese immigrations and border patrols investigate those people who were intercepted and then and found out that they are not actually from Burma, most of them. So they have to talk to Bangladesh authority to receive those people back there. So as far as I understand, most of those people who were numbering at the time, about 700 of them, were received back by the Bangladesh authority. Coincidentally, VOA was there. Mm. And me and one of my colleagues were happened to be in Arakan State at the time, and we interviewed a few those people who were brought back to Burma. And then we interviewed about 20 of them. All of them told us that they are actually from Burma. Initially, in international news, they all would claim that they are Rohingyas from Burma.
Bangladesh has a question as to where these people are actually from. And if they feel they're not from Burma, they're not going to let them in. Is that the issue?
Yeah, the current issue is a little bit different from that. Mm-hmm. Because of the situations, recent situations, because of the security clearing in, situation, so-called, after a few security posts in Arakan State were attacked by the militants. So the security cleared the villages, and because of that, recently, a lot of people who are fearful of a situation fled to Bangladesh. So the number, you mentioned that over 6,000 people, 6,500. It is a kind of a controversial number. In Bangladesh, Bangladesh newspapers are even claiming even higher number. They are talking about 300,000. So, but in a Burmese side, Burmese authorities are maintaining, saying that security has been very tight from both sides, from a Burma side and as well as from a Bangladesh side. So how come these 65,000 refugees fled there since there was a really, really tight security, mainly for an immigration issue as well as drug trafficking issue?
Tan Luen Thun, chief of VOA Burmese, we had a much longer conversation about the refugees, and we'll have more in upcoming VOA Asia episodes as this is a complex situation, and many people there have very different perspectives about their situation and relationship with Myanmar's government. Developing at this hour in Asia, Chinese authorities have detained a drone pilot after a close call between a commercial drone and a passenger plane. Video shows the airliner descending for landing, apparently taken from the perspective of the unmanned drone flying at close range. VOA Asia keeps you informed all day on Facebook at VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia. President Barack Obama will finish his second term as the top U.S. elected official on Friday at noon local time in Washington. And like every U.S. president before him, Mr. Obama traveled the world extensively during his 8 years in office. He met many ordinary people in the streets where they work and live. And while growing up, he spent time in Indonesia. And so as president, Mr. Obama seemed especially to enjoy his trips to Asia. Our VOA Khmer reporters asked Cambodians what they thought of President Obama. Rong Lina is a student at National University of Management.
I like him for his simplicity. Wherever he goes, he easily mingles with common people, even though he's very important. For example, when he shared food with others, he seemed just like them.
Pena Sastra, university student Sith Monica, likes the way the president pays attention to all people.
I like him most because as president of the United States, he pays attention to the poor people, especially African Americans and immigrants from poor Asian countries like Cambodia. He values them and gives them jobs.
Mrs. Obama, of course, is also a favorite among many, including Sith Monica.
I also like his family and his wife, Michelle Obama, because When she starts speaking, she always encourages women. She's well-educated and so lovely.
Out on the street, 38-year-old motor taxi driver Bun Sun says President Obama was looking out for the rights of people everywhere.
I like his leadership because in his role as the U.S. president, he has done a lot to involve Asia, like Cambodia. He visited here and talked about human rights with Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen. I like him so much because he has compassion for the people.
Jay Roddy is a 31-year-old street vendor who enjoyed Mr. Obama's openness and support of freedom everywhere.
I like him because he does not discriminate. He likes to get involved in any country that suppresses freedom. He likes to find a solution. He helps others. He does not mind whether the country is big or small. If they do bad, he would say it's bad, and vice versa.
And as our peaceful transition of power takes place literally within eyesight of our VOA studios, we'll be here Friday Washington time, Saturday your time, so you may follow all of the events during the inauguration of Donald Trump. Be sure to listen to our special VOA Asia program at this time. Of course, we'll be on Facebook at VOA Asia. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Like us on Facebook at VOA Asia. Find us at voanews.com. That's our website. As we mentioned, we'll have our special inaugural coverage as Donald Trump becomes the 45th U.S. president. Send us your comments on the change of U.S. presidents to our Facebook page. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Carl Starling, managing editor Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. Have a wonderful day ahead. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Iraq and Syria, U.S.-led coalition forces are making progress in the fight against ISIL, including in two crucial areas, killing its leaders and taking back territory. The U.S. Defense Department announced this month that a Syria-based Islamic State leader, Mahmoud al-Isawi, died in a coalition airstrike in Raqqa on December 31st. Al-Isawi was a long-standing ISIL member who controlled the flow of instructions and finances between ISIL-held areas and ISIL leaders and provided support to propaganda and intelligence outlets. Al-Isawi was also known to have facilitated trans-regional travel with other ISIL external operations coordinators and had a close relationship with Abd al-Basit al-Iraqi, the emir of ISIL's Middle East attack network, who was killed in a coalition airstrike on November 2, 2016. Al-Isawi's death brought the number of significant ISIL leaders killed last year to 16. These losses, as the Defense Department said, have degraded ISIL's transregional attack and facilitation network and are forcing ISIL fighters to increase their focus on internal security. In a press briefing from Baghdad, U.S. Air Force Colonel John Dorian, spokesman for Operation Inherent Resolve, also noted the progress being made in liberating territory from the terrorists. In Syria, he said, the Syrian Democratic Forces are continuing their advance to isolate Raqqa.
Since this current phase began on December 9th, the SDF have liberated more than 500 square miles of Syrian land, home to tens of thousands of people who have been brutalized by ISIL's rule.
In Iraq, Colonel Dorian noted, Iraqi security forces, with the help of coalition airstrikes and advisors, are making progress in their operation to liberate Mosul.
The city is completely surrounded, and the enemy doesn't have the ability to resupply or reinforce their fighters.
Colonel Dorian said, as difficult and dangerous as the fight for Mosul is and will be, time is not on the enemy's side. It's on the side of the Iraqi security forces, and they are going to retake Mosul. ISIL is a brutal and determined enemy, but the U.S.-led coalition and the local fighters it supports will keep intensifying the pressure until Syria and Iraq are free from ISIL's gruesome grip.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.